Building Bridges, your community and labor report, and I should say today, your international report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. And later on, taxi drivers' suicides reveal the dark side of the gig economy. But with Bayreville Desai, Executive Director, New York Taxi Workers Alliance.
But first, a coalition for an international offensive to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners is gaining momentum.
A call for freedom for Mumia Abu-Jamal and all political prisoners is picking up steam, with solidarity actions planned for the end of March for his status hearing on March 27th in Philadelphia, plus a court hearing on April 30th, which could eventually lead to his freedom.
After years of global community meetings, protests, petitions, and legal challenges, the People's Movement succeeded in taking Mumia off death row in 2011 and elevating Mumia to internationally recognized stature. Mumia now has become a name recognized such that it rivals top-tier athletes and entertainers and is considered a hero to all people seeking liberation, having inspired millions around the world from Berlin to Brazil, Georgia to Ghana, who rally regularly on his behalf, demanding he receives release now or a new trial.
And in France, Mumia is considered a freedom fighter because of his advocacy for the oppressed everywhere. Mumia is the voice of the voiceless, who chronicles the legacy of people's struggles worldwide. And one of the greatest threats to U.S. imperialism is the uprising of young Mumias from the streets of Philadelphia to the streets of Paris.
Mumia has wrongly spent more than half his life in prison, most of which time was on death row and in solitary confinement, before the Supreme Court held that application of the death penalty to Mumia was unconstitutional and instead shackled him with a life sentence for a crime, the killing of a police officer, that he did not commit. And now we are particularly honored to have in studio Jackie Otto. And I will say that I took Spanish in school, so bear with me and correct me if the pronunciation isn't as beautiful and lyrical as it should be. Jackie is a union organizer and member of the General Confederation of Labor in France, the CGT, a national trade union center, the first of the five major French confederations of trade unions. He is co-chair of Liberons Mumia, and we are going to find out a lot more about what that is. And Patrick Kamenik, who is a retired journalist, who remains active in the union movement in the SNJ, the CGT, which is part of the CGT, and with the National Union of Journalists, which is with the CGT. And he is a representative of the European Federation of Journalists as well. And Dr. Claude Guillemot-Pujol, who is a professor of American Studies in Tours and Clermont-Ferrand Universities and author of a book about women in prison dedicated to the MOVE sisters. And in 2007, wrote the Abu-Jamal biography, A Free Man on Death Row, who says, Mumia is an example to all of us because he remains an activist even after having spent 30-plus years in hell. And, of course, there's a new edition that just came out in December. Well, I want to start with, I have to say, our guest walked in with a gorgeous set of photographs. And the photographs are of at least, two of them, not three of them. One of our guests was not allowed in to see Mumia. The other two were. And the photographs are of them visiting Mumia. And I want you to just tell me what you can about that visit, what it meant to you and what your impression and feeling about Mumia was.
Okay, I'll speak first, and after I think Jackie could say a couple of words too. I've been visiting Mumia since 1995. One of the last picture we could have from Mumia was, you know, when he was in court in 1995, when Disabled let us just interview him for a short time. Maybe you remember, but it was in Philly, in City Hall. And so I've been a regular visitor on death row, and Jackie joined me later. In 2000, so what to say about it? It's once you stepped into death row, you just can't leave them behind. You've got to go on and on and on and keep visiting them, because it's very disturbing for the guards, extremely disturbing for guards to see that these people, which we think are just nobody, these death row prisoners, which we treat like, you know, horribly, you know, can have visitors, especially visitors from abroad. And at the same time, seeing Mumia, the first time you see in this glass cabinet, you know, and you can touch him, and he's very charismatic, very proud, very bright, you know, it's something you can never forget. And you see such a person caged, you say, our democracies have a big problem somewhere. That's what I would say for now.
Visite à Mumia. Qu'est-ce que tu dirais des visites à Mumia?
Avec Claude à Bouja.
With Claude.
D'abord dans le couloir de la mort, puis lorsque sa peine a été commuée, dans la prison où il se trouve actuellement à Frackville.
For a couple of times on death row and now in Frackville. What Jackie could add is that we were with Mumia the day the decision was taken about commuting his sentence to life in prison. We didn't know, and he didn't know about what was going to happen.
Ce que je retiens de toutes ces visites, c'est que ce soit aujourd'hui ou lors des fois précédentes, depuis donc de très nombreuses fois, je suis toujours impressionné par l'homme qu'est Mumia.
What I would say, whether it was on death row or nowadays, is that I'm always very impressed by Mumia, by the man Mumia Abu Jamal.
Par son parcours de journaliste.
First, because I've been a journalist.
Par son charisme.
Because he's so charismatic.
Par la communication, comme il est capable de transmettre lorsqu'on le rencontre même la première fois, on a l'impression de le connaître déjà depuis très longtemps.
And it was impressive, but even if the first time you meet him, you think you have known him forever.
Et surtout par la force incroyable. Il a un charisme physique aussi, mais la force incroyable de sa voix, de sa conviction et du combat qu'il mène en prison depuis tant d'années.
And because he's such a special voice, very special voice, and because he's such a committed man, and because of the strength of his character, and how he can keep on fighting after all these years on death row and in prison today.
Et ce combat, en toute modestie, comme il nous le dit toujours, ou des fois il ne le dit pas, mais on le ressent, c'est le combat qu'il mène finalement pour tous les autres. Tous ceux qui sont victimes d'incroyables injustices, comme c'est son cas.
And some, even if he doesn't say it, you know, he's not fighting for himself, just for himself. He's fighting for everybody. And that's what's very incredible.
But, and we'll get to Patrick, who, as I said, is obviously the problem person in this group, because they wouldn't even let him in, my goodness. And we'll find out why. But you are labor activists, you are trade union activists, and you're here from France. And I'm sure many people are saying, why? Why should people in France have such affection for and raise to the hilt our political prisoner? What does it mean for the French people? And where does this tie in to being labor activists in France? And obviously, all of you can answer that. They're all pointing to each other as to who answers it first.
I must say, question I've been asked to me again and again in Philadelphia by the journalist from the Inquirer, of course, okay? Mm-hmm. What are you doing here? Don't you have French prisoners? And I've been repeating again and again, not being aggressive or anything. I'm not interfering with your country, not at all. That's not the problem. But that's kind of French history, European history. We always stood for Angela Davis. We stood for Mandela. We stood for all political prisoners anymore. And that's part of a history. Fighting for someone who has been oppressed is just fighting for all of us. And that's the way we do it. Not to be arrogant, not to have an attitude, but just out of solidarity. That's it. It's him, it's her, it could be me, it could be you.
But you have street signs with Mumia. You have, I think, towns named after Mumia. It's really something exceptional that we need to learn from you. What is it about Mumia and France that really clicks?
And pourquoi la France, c'est une histoire qui touche tellement les Français. I don't have an explanation. Sometimes I can see something very shocking. I say, Mumia, it's a lucky story. I think we bump into each other. We bump into city councillor. We felt concerned by the case. He's been made honorary citizen in something like 20 cities. Yes, he's got two streets named after him. I think he's a popular hero. I don't know how to put it. He's a popular hero. He's got this big smiley face. He never complains. He writes beautiful books. Life from Death Row, I just always say, it's just like the diary of Anne Frank for Jewish girl, you know. It's something which, if I say ordinary, it would be derogative, but that's something that's everyday life. And it's a kind of love story. You know, Jack is excellent also. He's a good organizer and fundraiser, you know. And we get donation. We've been doing a lot of money for Mumia campaign from very people with small revenue. We get $10, $20. And finally, that's a lot of money. That's the way you build up love and solidarity. I don't have specific explanation.
Patrick, and then we'll get back to Jackie, who I see is raring to add his voice.
I must say that I agree, of course, with Jackie and Claude from what they say. But as a journalist, I must say he's part of our fight because he's one of ours, even if he's a American or whatever nation. He's a ordinary member of our union, and therefore I was so disappointed, so sad I couldn't visit him and translate for him for all we'd done for him and all the message we have received to support him. And the last thing we did, I think it's important, the International Federation of Journalists sent a letter to the governor of Pennsylvania to ask about the health of Mumia, to ask them to help Mumia for curing and giving back to a normal situation. Therefore, I think the fight is all together. Simple worker, journalist, because we are fighting for freedom of expression. And the journalist who is beyond bars, we cannot leave that without fighting. And the same fight we have with our colleagues in Turkey. 150 colleagues are beyond bars in Turkey. We are doing the same fight. But Mumia is a kind of a brother. It's nearly 30 years we are fighting with Jackie, with Claude, to free Mumia. And we will not, of course, let that down, even if I couldn't come in the jail, come and visit him in the jail. We will, of course, do as much as we can to help him with the new trial, with the possibility that Mumia will be someday in Paris.
Why couldn't you get in to visit him in the jail?
I didn't receive any official explanation. They just say you are not on the list. I suppose because maybe my former job prevent me to...
Your former job, which is?
Journalist.
Journalist. Well, that's a good reason.
If I may say something, his brother Keith couldn't visit him yesterday. He was turned down.
Mumia's brother.
Mumia's brother was very sick. We came from North Carolina.
He has cancer himself, yeah, actually. We've interviewed him.
Exactly. And they turned him down. They said, you can't get in. And he was very, very upset. Very upset. And the reason was that Mumia already had visitors on Saturday. And visitors were us. Because Kyiv said, I'm coming from far away. And the guards said, yes, but French people come from further still. And they came on Saturday, so you can't get in, which is totally stupid. He's on the list, you know. He should have been allowed in.
Well, it's
extremely
part
cruel.
Of the sadism. We're talking about a man who's been on death row, a man who's been in solitary for most of that, and who has been denied health care, and to this day is being denied the kind of health care he needs to live a comfortable life. But I see, Jackie, your story about what you think politically Mumia has meant and why it relates to the struggles, indeed, in France.
La signification politique de Mumia et comment ça se connecte au combat en France.
D'abord, pour répondre à votre question, d'abord, je suis un militant syndical. Et très jeune, engagé, je me suis, j'allais dire, j'ai appris dans mon travail de syndicaliste pour défendre mes collègues, de travail. J'ai appris dans cette longue histoire de la CGT, dans ma génération en tout cas, on était particulièrement attentif à ce qui se passait au-delà. Des batailles syndicales en France, ce qui se passait de par le monde. Et sur les questions qui touchent aux injustices, qui touchent à la misère du monde, j'allais dire, mon engagement s'est tout fait naturellement dans mon prolongement de vie syndicale en France.
I joined the union when I was very young. So from an early age, I learned that, you know, all fights are connected and you have to be in solidarity with what happens around you and even on the international level, you know. So that's part of my personal experience, basically.
Notre syndicat, la CGT, a effectivement une très très longue expérience des relations internationales. Entre les travailleurs, entre les syndicats du monde qui défendent leurs intérêts. Et j'ai donc trouvé tout naturellement, avec mon syndicat, ce chemin du combat et de l'attention de ces hommes, de ces femmes qui, dans le monde, souffraient d'injustice, souffraient de misère, souffraient de faim et qui touchent encore, hélas, au 21e siècle aujourd'hui, beaucoup de gens sur cette planète.
Jackie, just remind you our goal, our union CGT, and if I can sum up what he said, the solidarity is the lead to our movement to help people like Mumia.
What do you mean by that? How?
I mean that solidarity. If union like CGT in France, who was always fighting for the best situation for workers in our country, cannot look at what is happening in a country near France or in Africa or in America, in the South or North America, and defend people who are suffering more than we are. And if we cannot help them to free from what the government or the bad laws they are fighting with, it's there is no real reason to be a unionist because a unionist is not only for workers in your country but for everybody in the world.
Now I see why they didn't let you into the prison.
Maybe.
You said to me you were a communist. I think so. I think so, and I think that's wonderful.
I know that the three of you have been traveling around the U.S. and are here to address certain meetings. I wonder if you could tell us where you've been and what you've seen.
Okay. we flew from Paris on Friday, and we first planned to visit Mumia on Sunday, but when our friend Joanna called the prison, make sure to confirm that we're on the list. And the prison said we're confirmed for Saturday. So that's, you've got to be very flexible, you know. So finally, we drove straight from the airport to Frackville, where Mumia's prison is, you know, Frackville, which is quite far away. And we could visit him the next day. It was not very easy. You were kicked out. We kept us waiting. They kept us waiting, but finally we got in and we managed to talk with Mumia for 3 hours, you know. And one thing we should add is that Mumia always says something which is for all the people who are listening at the same time. He says, if I'm still alive, it's because I can feel the love of all these people around me, you know. One of the things we ask people that to do at home for his birthday, for instance, in April, is to send him a postcard, just a postcard from the place where they live, not a birthday postcard. So he gets to know all the places in France, for instance, and when we talk with him, he says, oh yes, this place is here, this place is here, and it makes outside people real in a way for him, you know. That's very important. So we spent time with him, we fought with, you know, money to get him some food. We have very, very little food left, because that's the pleasure when you visit prisoners, you can buy them some food. And because food otherwise is not too good. And want me to go on to the next day visits? Up yes. to you. Well, we have a question? No? Okay. Okay. All right. So we spent something like 3 hours with Mumia. We don't want to stay too long because he's stuck. He can't go back to his cell after. It's something very complicated. You must always keep in mind that you are the outsider. You are going out back to your life. And whatever wrong thing you did wrong in the prison, they are going to be punished for that, you know. We must always keep this in mind, you know. And I don't keep them talking for too long because he gets tired also. He still has very itching skin, you know, and he can't sleep properly, so he gets very tired.
Well, one of the things, I'm sitting here with a new book that just came out that I have of Mumia. It's called Murder Incorporated, Empire, Genocide, Manifest Destiny, Dreaming of Empire. This is just book one, and it's thick and it's wonderful, and we've got this brilliant internationalist whose mind just leaps over all prison walls and permeates the universe. And I'm wondering how much of the political ideas of Mumia, through his commentaries, through his prolific writing, his journalism, has that also affected and influenced our comrades in France? And indeed, you're going to have to then tell us something about the union movement, because it certainly is somewhat different than ours, because while we have locals here who will support Mumia Abu-Jamal, the bulk of the union movement has a hard time in understanding beyond, if you will, bread and butter issues, and I'm not sure how much they understand of that these days. So maybe you can talk about the politics of Mumia and what that has meant to the French struggle, which you were all part of.
Patrick, question for you.
I think for me, I don't know for Jackie and Claude, but for me, the real one of the issue for me, which is very important, is the fight against racism and the solidarity, as I said earlier. I think this fight is one of the most important for us in our country, in our union. And I think what is fighting for, what more than 30 years in the death row, now in jail, all this description he's doing, he's writing about his condition, and not paying attention only to him, but working for other prisoners, giving his time to write books and radio each week or each day. He's having a radio commentary. All this for us is very important. It shows that solidarity and collective fight for a better world is the main activity Mumia is doing, and it comes to join our movement, and I think this is why we are so close to Mumia.
Jackie?
Oui, je voulais dire d'abord qu'en France, le combat de solidarité pour Mumia s'est fédéré autour de la défense des droits de l'homme et de cet homme en particulier, devenu l'un, pour pas dire le symbole, sans doute le plus connu sur la planète, comme victime de cette affreuseté, je sais pas comment on peut dire pour prendre un terme que je ne connais pas en américain, mais en tout cas du combat universel pour l'abolition de la peine de mort. C'est d'abord ça qui a fédéré le combat pour Mumia en France.
So the first thing, if so many people focus on Mumia because it has become the international symbol of the abolitionist movement, the anti-death penalty activist. That was basically the first thing. That was the first focus.
C'est d'abord ce combat. Ensuite, évidemment, beaucoup de livres de Mumia ont été traduits en français. On a commencé à faire connaître au-delà de l'homme qu'il était, de son combat. Et de notre nécessaire solidarité pour qu'il ne soit qu'il sorte du couloir de la mort. C'est la première bataille importante qui a été gagnée tous ensemble au plan planétaire, et nous les Français nous avons apporté notre contribution, mais nous avons aussi mené le combat de faire connaître que faisait cet homme, que lui reprochait-on, et au travers de son métier de journaliste et effectivement des combats qu'il menait, on a fait connaître effectivement à des centaines de milliers, des millions de Français, qui était cet homme, quel était son combat et pourquoi il avait été condamné.
So basically, we have been, most of Mumia's book have been translated into French, so people know about Mumia's points of view on politics, mass incarceration, fight against capitalism and all that. So something that many people know, but also why they got so interested in the case of Mumia, basically.
Can you go on? Okay. And Jackie said that the fight was also for human rights fight, and this is very important because it was one of the main stone of our fight to show solidarity to Mumia, and it was the start of big demonstration we had in Paris and the way we could help him.
Well, one of the things that we can't let you go without also talking about, Macron has launched a virulent attack on organized labor and many of the media around the world, as they do here, of course, claims that the economic problems are the problem of organized labor, as they eke out a wage and whatever benefits. But the labor movements are much more aggressive and much more strong in France. Can you tell us what's happening now as there are threats of major strikes and a showdown with President Macron? And, of course, we know what Mumia would say about that. But
we'll ask him next time. But I must say the real problem is not the workers or the unions or the strikes or the demonstration, but the real problem is Macron himself. By the anti-social law he's trying to put on the table. And I think we can describe him as a French Margaret Thatcher. He's going, if we let him go, he's going to destroy all our benefits, for social benefits. All our unions, since the Second World War, we succeed. All this kind of activity we did is going to raise them, to erase them, for my English. And I think today, we show the last demonstration in Paris just before we came here on Friday. more than 200 demonstrations took place in France. Nearly 500,000 people demonstrated in the street, of course, mainly in Paris, but everywhere in small and bigger towns, because people, they don't want the railways worker to be privatized, if I can express myself like that. They don't want the hospital
privatized.
To be privatized. They don't want the public sector to be as we see in some countries where there are only private hospital, private transportation, and there is no more public spirit services, and that I think French people are not ready to support that, and therefore there were many of them in the street. And the next next month in April there will be a new big demonstration nationwide, and the national railway workers are going to start a strike next month, 3 days in a month, and then they will start again working, and they will try to stop the antisocial law that Macron is trying to impose in France.
You know, Patrick, we had talked before about the letter that the International Association of Journalists sent to the governor of Pennsylvania with regard to Mumia. What was your role in that, and what is the significance of the International Federation of Journalists coming out in support of Mumia?
Therefore, we are very proud that this letter was sent, and it was prior to this letter, at the last World Congress we had in Angers, we vote for a motion to support Mumia, and it was the international solidarity among journalists who expressed him at that time, where Claude and Jackie were with us during this congress in Angers, and therefore we decide not to let the things but we ask now our federation to show more solidarity from all the world, from the 600,000 members of this international federation, and then we decide to send the letter to the governor Tom Fall.
Well, I want to get back, and I want to list the two things that I definitely want to find out. Of course, you've also visited our sisters from the MOVE organization, but I also want to just for a moment just keep on the issue of France. What do we need to know about the working class and the union movement here? Because certainly we operate in a very project-oriented, a very siloed, individualist basis, and very, very much, again, just bread and butter issues without looking at the issues of state power. Tell us more about the state of the French unions and what we need to understand to, frankly, inspire us here, just as perhaps Mumia has inspired the politics of our comrades in France.
I'll let it to Jackie after, but I'll say one thing. I've been part of I've been working with union organizers in the U.S., okay? And I've realized that there is such a difference between starting a union here and I started a union in France, you know. Unions are part of French history. They have been part of a political history. They made French life what it is today. That's to say, free public school, free college education, more or less free hospital, National Health Service is National Health Service, you know. And I think that Patrick pointed out quite accurately that French people are not ready to give up welfare state. Of course, there will be discussion. Macron is very powerful, and part of the young people think it's the new generation. So that's the new event. I just can't tell. I don't know what's going to happen. But it's not going to be easy, and I think he should not forget that
French people are used to have public services, and we're not ready to give up just like this. I don't know if I answered your question.
Quite. Okay.
Oui, je voulais revenir par rapport à la question que vous avez posée sur Monsieur Macron.
So I want you to talk about Mr. Macron.
Pour dire deux choses. La première, c'est qu'il s'est présenté comme un homme qui n'était ni de gauche ni de droite.
So he first said that he was neither a left-wing man or a right-wing man. He didn't belong to any parties.
Mais après ces quelques mois de présidence, on s'aperçoit qu'il est surtout de droite.
After a few months in office, we realize that he really is a right-wing man.
Et être de droite, il fait comme aucun président l'a fait en si peu de temps, c'est de s'attaquer finalement aux droits des travailleurs français et étrangers qui vivent et qui travaillent dans notre pays.
His first target is to cut down on the rights of French workers and even European workers who are working in France.
C'est une véritable entreprise de démolition, comme Patrick l'a indiqué tout à l'heure.
As Patrick said, he's trying to just take to pieces the public services.
Et il le fait dans des conditions complètement, y compris antidémocratiques, par rapport aux institutions.
And he's just ignoring, you know, constitutional rights and democratic process.
Il n'y a pas de débat sur ces projets sociaux et économiques.
For the first time, there's no debate in parliament, you know.
Il passe en force systématiquement.
He just ignore them. He just want to have his own will.
Et le monde du travail,
and
même pour ceux qui ont voté pour lui,
and even workers who voted for him,
commence à comprendre que cet homme est sans doute pas le président qu'ils avaient imaginé.
Are beginning to realize that it's not the man whom they thought he was.
Puisqu'il a fait croire qu'il allait tout changer, que ni la gauche ni la droite, lorsqu'il dirigeait le pays, c'était bon pour le pays. Et on s'aperçoit surtout aujourd'hui que tout ce qu'il fait, c'est de tout démolir ce qui a été construit par des générations et des générations de Français.
He criticized what former president did, whether socialist president or conservative president, but basically he's taking our whole institution to pieces.
Et c'est la raison pour laquelle, après une période de regard des Français en attendant de voir ce qu'ils allaient voir,
for a short time, people just watched and watched.
Aujourd'hui, le monde du travail commence à relever la tête pour combattre les projets vraiment de Monsieur Macron.
And today, the workers are taking to the street to fight back and tell Macron that they totally disagree.
Et tout ce qu'il démolit, au-delà du monde du travail, c'est effectivement tout ce qui soudait finalement les Français. C'est les grandes conquêtes sociales. Ce sont les grandes conquêtes sociales, la santé plus généralement.
Social progress, national health service.
Les acquis sociaux dans les entreprises.
And workers' rights at work.
Les droits des travailleurs, des syndicats, etc., etc.
Union rights, union leaders and all that.
Monsieur Macron est un démolisseur et je pense qu'il faudra tout mettre en œuvre effectivement pour l'arrêter. Avant qu'il ne liquide purement et simplement la France, celle qui avait cette si belle image d'un beau pays avec des travailleurs qui effectivement avaient conquis des droits sociaux.
And we've got maybe 5 minutes left, so we need to wrap this up. But I think you've given me all the answers in these last questions because Mumia is an internationalist. You people are, and as we would always say here, we have. The workers have nothing to lose but their chains, and Ken always adds,
we have a world to win.
And we do have a world to win. In the last, if you could give us just a minute or two about your trip to the MOVE sisters, who, of course, Mumia always supported and worked with. And then we're going to bring in, lurking in the background, Suzanne Ross to tell people how they can mobilize for Brother Mumia.
Yeah. So after visiting Mumia, we just jump into the car to make it work. And we had 400 more miles to drive because we've got to realize that the sisters are in a prison which is next to Lac Erie at the Canadian border. By the way, this prison used to be a university campus. It's because they run out of students, they turn it into a women's prison, you know, which is quite an atmosphere, you know.
These women are very, very strong, very good sisters. They are good workers, social workers in the prison, you know. And I don't know, it's part of a family. It's difficult. It's always get very emotional when you speak about her, because next August they will have spent 40 years in prison. Can you imagine?
No.
40 years.
Yes, no.
I'm worried about the three women left. Yes. Merle died in 1998. There's still Janine, Jeanette, and Debbie left. Debbie is very strong because she still have a husband in prison, but still alive. She has son, grandchildren. She has something to look to when she gets out of prison, because I'm sure she will. Janine, since her husband passed away 2 years ago, I think she is very tired. She finds it difficult to sleep. There are six women in a cell, plus the dog, which they are training for a year or 14 months. The prison get money for it. They get them as puppy, and when we get to 14 months or 15 months, they go to the training. So it's very heart-rending, even if it's on top of everything, because they take care of him. They must stay up at night, make sure, you know, the dogs are clean and all that, and after they just go away, but we'll never see them again. It's cruel all along, you know. And Janet is the last one, and it's hard for Janet because she has more or less no family apart from the move people. Since last year, when we walked out, you know, the only thing she said, okay, Claude, I'm coming to France with you when I get out. I say, yes, okay, no problem, Janet, okay. And that's it. They're a great woman. They need support. They're going to be paroled soon in May, and we need letters of support to get out of this hell.
Now, Suzanne, I wish we could keep you here for hours. Maybe we can make sure to get you back, or we'll just have to go to France and
with Janet,
absolutely, and cover the story. Suzanne, we have about 2 minutes left. We have our sister on the phone who's waiting to get in on this discussion about actually what's happening with taxi workers who are losing their lives due to the economy and the wrecking of the industry in this country. Suzanne Ross?
Well, what a great show. To the hosts, congratulations, and the guests. I was fascinated listening. For those of you who are listening, please remember this is a campaign, an international campaign. During this week, next, and through this month, there are demonstrations all over the world, from South Africa to London to Paris to many other countries, Berlin, and many other places, plus many right here in the United States. This past weekend was packed with activities here in New York and in Philadelphia. Tomorrow is a status hearing. That's a kind of an interim review of the case in Philadelphia. For those of you who can still go, I'm going to give you a phone number if you call tonight, 917-584-2135. 917-584-2135 if you want to get up very early in the morning and leave New York by 6 o'clock to go to the court hearing. The big date, listen carefully, everybody, is April 30th of this year, just in about a month. And that is the day when we get a decision, presumably, unless they delay again, and we know they're procrastinating tactics. The big decision on whether there will be a chance to review the entire case and potentially open up the possibility of Mumia finally being freed. Please call 212-330-8029 if you want to go on the bus that day from New York to Philadelphia. Again, that's 212-330-8029. And please check the website that covers all of these activities internationally and this country. That's FreeMumia.com. Again, www.FreeMumia.com. Please join this struggle that represents so much around the whole world.
And you are?
And I am Suzanne Ross.
Claude Guillermo Pujol.
Jackie Otto.
Patrick Kaminka.
We're going to see you in France. We're going to participate in the demonstrations there on
Labor.
And
May 1st.
May 1st, of course. And then we're going to bring them back here. And we're going to dump Trump and Macron and free Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And all political prisoners.
And all political prisoners. Free them all. Thank you, dear comrades. Did that for, well, Mumia wrote that song, a love song to his wife. Well, we move on now quickly. We're, you know, in a cluttered studio, so if you hear some noise, we're making our transition, but easy to do because Bayrevi Desai, executive director of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, is one of our favorite comrades and one of the real sheroes of the labor movement here. And we're going to be talking about taxi driver suicides, which reveal the dark side of the gig economy. And Bayrevi, thank you so much for joining us as always and take us into that discussion.
Thank you, Mimi and Ken.
Bayrevi, why are taxi workers so despondent right now? Why have we had 4 suicides in the last 4 months? What's going on?
Oh, it's just such a vicious race to the bottom. 2 of the drivers were livery drivers, a black car driver, Douglas Shifter, who actually shot himself in front of City Hall and left a very long and detailed note on Facebook, which, you know, really described in detail, very analytically, the race to the bottom that an entire profession has been facing. And now this past Friday, brother, you know, Nicholas Ochisor, who was a owner driver, a yellow cab medallion owner driver. And so you have, you know, in New York City, we have 5 distinct sectors in, you know, in the taxi for hire vehicle service. And we now have, you know, suicides by drivers in 4 out of the 5 sectors. I mean, this is a serious, serious, you know, crisis that is really born out of a political failure to regulate companies being financed by Wall Street. I mean, the havoc that Uber and Lyft and these other companies have unleashed on this workforce is something that we have never seen in a 100-year industry before.
When you say these companies, are you referring to Uber, to Lyft, to the medallion owners? Be more specific, please.
Well, the current crisis is about, you know, Uber and Lyft and their business model, that in the name of technology, these companies have bought their way into, you know, a deregulated business model that is taking what has been a full-time profession for generations and turning it into poverty pay gig work where no driver can survive. I mean, you're seeing, you know, record high foreclosures and bankruptcies, for example, by medallion owner drivers. And, you know, the green cab sector, which was owned primarily, exclusively, not primarily, but exclusively by the drivers themselves, has been at a standstill where, you know, the green cab, you know, the cabs are just sitting idle. The shields have been turned over to the TLC. The TLC can't even sell even anymore. And this is after there was a 10-year struggle by the drivers themselves coming out of the livery industry to produce the green cab sector. I mean, it was destroyed before it was even given an opportunity to take off. Meanwhile, Uber drivers themselves have been found. You know, MIT put out a study a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, Uber made a big fuss out of the numbers. MIT was gracious enough to use Uber's own metrics to reassess their numbers and still found that more than half of the drivers were earning below minimum wage. There are stories across the country of Uber drivers, you know, going online with GoFundMe pages to pay for, you know, to pay for rent and medical bills. There are stories of, you know, Lyft drivers, women drivers working up until, you know, women, you know, pregnant women drivers working up until they've gone, you know, straight from dropping off a fare to the hospital to give birth. I mean, this is not the new, this cannot be the new economy. This is such a dystopian vision of the new economy, completely built on the impoverishment of working people, people still laboring 60 to 70 hours a week. And this is not acceptable.
Now, there are 100,000 Uber and Lyft cars on the road in New York City, and only, what, 15,000 medallion cars?
I mean, this is being flooded.
It's being flooded with these cars. Isn't there some way we can get a limit? I mean, the medallions were a way to place a limit on the number of cars on the streets so that this was in the 30s, so that the workers could make a living. Isn't there some way of doing that with these big corporations, or are they just too powerful, or they have too much political influence?
No, I mean, just to, like, unpackage that a little bit, I mean, that's absolutely right. You know, the cap on the number of vehicles, a minimum regulated fare, so there is a wage floor across the industry, cap on the expenses that the companies charge to the drivers, these are three numbers that have been really important, and it's their combination that have produced, you know, livable incomes for drivers for generations, right? And it's not been an easy struggle for us. I mean, you guys have known for the past 20 years, we've been fighting the good fight to bring driver incomes up to a livable income standard. And right when we finally won them in 2012 is when all this destruction started to settle in. And, you know, the thing is, on top of, you know, being unregulated as far as the industry regulations are concerned, governing, you know, the number of vehicles as well as the rate of fare, these, you know, Uber and Lyft, these companies also engage in massive misclassification. So they keep flooding the streets with vehicles by using bonuses to attract part-timers for the short haul. There's a revolving door, which means the full-timers are losing out on major jobs. They do that so they could be the first to monopolize. Just like it's the old Starbucks model that Wall Street used. It's the old Amazon model. And by the way, today, Uber and Lyft combine to spend more on lobbying than Amazon, Walmart, and Microsoft combined, right? And so they've used their political favor to keep regulation at bay, both industry regulations that have protected drivers and the consumer, as well as labor law that's, you know, that's established the universal values that all workers should be entitled to. These companies want to control the drivers. They control the economic destiny, but they don't want any responsibilities in return. And meanwhile, the drivers of the other sectors, you know, yellow, livery, traditional black cars, corporate black cars, are being crushed because of the number of vehicles that are out on the streets. No driver is winning. And when you're an owner driver that, you know, like Nicanor was, you know, who invested into the medallion, spent his family's life savings. He worked the night shift while his wife worked the day shift. This was a family business. They're not only facing the growing poverty of today and, you know, potential foreclosures and food shortages, they're also seeing their futures be completely wiped out.
Well, but I just want to make sure, baby, that we get in one critical thing amidst mm-hmm. all of this, which is that you folks don't take it lying down. There's already a demonstration planned this Wednesday, and I think it's critical that you list the demands, which also tell the story of what these drivers are facing and the decimation of their lives, their income, and their family structure.
Yes, we've been organizing, and we're calling on drivers and people of all good conscience. I mean, we have now lost four brothers. Four drivers have been buried by suicide because of this economic crisis. By political failure, there are political solutions. This Wednesday, 1 p.m. at the steps of City Hall, we will be there to mourn the loss of our brothers, to give faith to their families, to give strength to each other, and to call on the mayor and the Taxi and Limousine Commission and City Hall at large to cap the number of vehicles, to establish a wage floor, to raise the current rates so drivers can begin to earn a decent living again, and to call for regulations that would cap the expenses on the drivers and would protect them against massive wage theft across these industries. There are solutions here, and when we organize, we can win those solutions, but we need the good people of New York to stand with us so that labor and consumers can be calling for a just industry that can serve the people in the front and the people in the back of that car.
And that demonstration again is when?
Wednesday, this Wednesday at 1 p.m. at the steps of City Hall.
And your website for more information?
www.nytwa.org.
And, of course, we're going to be there Wednesday, March 28th at 1 p.m. on the steps of City Hall to fight for the very lives of our sister and brother cab drivers. And, Bedevi, in the last moments that we have, your message to our listeners?
This is a universal problem of the so-called gig economy, which is predicated on destroying full-time jobs, full-time employment. And we as a people, we have to stand up and fight for a better economy. This cannot be the new economic world order that we just accept lying down. The political failure by Wall Street, money that's, you know, guided political failure, we as organized people, we can fight for the proper changes to save lives and bring dignity to the jobs of over 100,000 taxi drivers and all the other workers that are on the front lines next to us and behind us.
Thank you so much. We're talking with Bayravi Desai, Executive Director of the New York Taxi Workers Alliance, and we'll see you on Wednesday to fight
back.
Thank
you, guys.
Bayravi, thank you for all that you do. You're really a champion of the working class, and it's really a pleasure to have you, and we will be there to cover that demonstration and bring more information to our listeners about the valiant struggle of the taxi drivers. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And I'm going to see you a Wednesday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. And if you heard some noise and jiggling and moving around, hey, we've got a small studio. Pay your pledge. Let's make our studios bigger, get more equipment. And do thank you for listening. And wow, it was pretty exciting to have all those folks
fantastic.
From France.
Struggles here and abroad.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Remind you to listen to Mimi on Wednesday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. And good night.
And get ready for Scott Soma in the house with Housing Notebook. Thanks for listening.
Come on, neighbors, let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls? But the rent keeps going up and up and up.
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m. Reactionary landlord.
This is Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, urging you to participate in an amazing event, a national town hall meeting focusing on Mayor Roz J. Baraka's quest to make Newark a model city, featuring an address by Danny Glover, Tuesday, April 3rd, 7 o'clock p.m. sharp at the historic Robert Treat Hotel, 50 Park Place in Newark. Other participants include Larry Hamm, Reverend Louise Scott Roundtree, Imam Akil Mateen, Professor Jaquir Jackson, Evangelist Ruby Annette Evans, scores of business leaders and potential investors from across Black America, and of course, the Honorable Rod.